afternoon. I'm Ryan. Thanks for sticking around because there's happy hour, free happy hour at Best Western right now. So anybody want it? But I'm the last speaker, so I get to go as long as I want, right? So there have been a lot of talks already about interesting objects, sort of like 2008 HA. And there are a couple of posters on this particular object and other related objects. So hopefully everybody can get their fill of these low luminosity transients. I'm working right now mostly with the CFA group, including Bob, and then also with the Berkeley group and a few others that have sort of trickled out of these places. So I should introduce this larger class of objects, which we refer to as the 2002 CX-like class. Saurabh is going to give a talk on this in a couple days, so he'll give you a lot more details. But basically, this is a very odd object, originally 2002 CX, which when Weidong wrote his paper, he called it the most peculiar 1A. I don't think that's the case anymore because there are a lot of them, but it's certainly very different from a prototypical 1A. If you look at the Phillips relation here, they fall off of this. This is O2 CX. These are a couple of other objects here. So they're off of this normal relationship. In addition to that, they have very hot photospheres. They have very low ejecta velocity. So people have been struggling with this now for the better part of a decade, trying to figure out exactly what these things are. And luckily, the sample has been growing and growing. So here's just the plot. Now, this is rough to look at, but these are the velocities of individual lines. These are iron lines. Here are sort of calcium, silicon, sulfur. The black dots are O2 CX. They're down here at like 6,000 kilometers a second, where normal 1As are way up at around 10,000. And in these lines, the intermediate mass element lines, it was even hard enough to detect it that we could just barely get, you get calcium, but silicon and sulfur are not necessarily detected in the spectra of O2 CX because they're relatively weak. Now, there is this class of objects, which, again, Saurabh will talk about a bit more, but these are sort of the key parts of the observations, that they have a low ejecta velocity, a low luminosity, a hot photosphere, at least at early times. They don't have this second near IR maximum that you would expect in a normal 1A. And then the late time spectra, this is O2 CX, these two. Here's a normal 1A, here's a normal 1A, here's a fainter 1A, here's O2 CX at an earlier time. But these are all they're all permitted iron 2 lines, pretty much, a few other elements. And this is at 230 days, this is 280 days. So you still haven't seen forbidden iron 2. The only forbidden lines you see are calcium, pretty much. So it's definitely a very dense environment at late times. It's a very interesting object. And again, Saurabh will look at it a little bit more. So 2008 HA is a particularly odd member of this class. It's a very extreme member where the ejecta velocity here are now only like 2,000 kilometers a second, rather than something like 5,000 or 6,000. And this is a spectrum of at about a week after maximum light. And what I'm showing here, if you convolve it with a Gaussian of 800 kilometers a second, convolve it with a Gaussian of 2,000 kilometers a second, and then if you take 91T up here and O2 CX down here, and you shift these in velocity space, essentially making it so that they're on the same ejection velocity, you see that the spectra are very similar once you account for the smearing and the recession velocity shift. It also had a very fast light curve. So these are the sorts of things that people have been talking about now as very, potentially very odd objects. Because the light curve declined incredibly fast. The delta M15 is larger than 2. The rise time, we don't have great observational constraints on the rise time. But if you just take an O2 CX or O5 HK light curve and you stretch it so that it matches the light curves, and those are the lines here, you end up getting that the rise time should be something like 10 days. Now, that's making a pretty big assumption that these things act the same way, but it's certainly smaller than about 15 days, and 10 days is, you know, at least good enough to say that it's fast. And it's incredibly faint. Now, Mansi already mentioned this object and how faint it was. The v absolute magnitude is minus 14.2 or so. The b magnitude is even fainter. And if you throw it up on this diagram, this is actually the b point, delta M15, and its absolute magnitude, you know, way off the scale from what was on this plot. So we know that this is a pretty extreme object. If you just assume that the luminosity at peak is powered by nickel 56, it has an incredibly small amount, something like 10 to the minus 3 solar masses of nickel. The ejecta mass also, if you take the kinetic energy, if you take and make some reasonable assumptions here, you only get a few tenths of a solar mass. So it's certainly not a complete destruction of a 1A, where you would expect something closer to, you know, 1.4 solar masses of ejecta. Now, this is where things get to be a little more complicated. So if it's not your prototypical 1A, then what exactly is it? Now, I'm going to just say that I mentioned four papers in this paper that I wrote up. There are way more models out there, I'm sure. But I looked at you know, this fallback scenario, which has already been talked about, the point 1A, electron capture, and then deflagration. They all sort of, and deflagration has been invoked multiple times to explain O2CX and O5HK and those sorts of objects. And Stefano, he preferred a massive star origin, either through fallback or electron capture. Now, this is a later time spectrum at about 2 months after maximum in black of O8HA. It's the same in all of these, just on different scales. And I'll point out 89B, which is a normal 1A, and you can see that the features match up, but the velocities are different, you know, with a few exceptions, which I'll talk about. O4AW is a particularly interesting type 1C supernova. It was originally classified as a 1A, and only after we got a nebular spectrum did we realize that it was actually a type 1C. And again, here, the features match up very well, you know, except for at these places, which is the calcium. So if you look at a low luminosity type 2, O5CS, here everything matches up well. If the pointer works, you can always use the physical. And here, you know, it had strong calcium. This is forbidden calcium 2. This is the permitted calcium IR triplet. And there, the ratios match up well. The features down here match up pretty well. But obviously, O8HA does not have any hydrogen. There's this odd object, which maybe Avishai is going to talk about a little bit in his talk, O5E, which has very similar ratios and at later times doesn't have particularly strong hydrogen. The features actually match up really, really well. O5E has larger velocities. And then up here is a particularly weird member of this O2CX class. It's exactly like all the other objects, except for one thing, and that's that it has helium in its spectrum. So if this comes from a white dwarf, there's obviously some helium around, either from a donor or from there being a helium layer in the actual star and its unburned material. But it's definitely a key aspect to understanding what's forming these objects. And if you look at the early time spectrum, I tried to put a plot from Stefano's paper because it shows this great comparison to a few objects at early times. But either my computer's too old or the file was too big, and it didn't really work out. But he has it on his poster, so take a look. Now, another way you can look at this is, rather than looking at the spectra and the physics of the object, is looking at where these objects occur. And if you just look at the distribution of these objects in their host galaxy morphologies, then what you end up getting is something particularly interesting. The O2CX like are the black curves, and then you can look at all the various different subclasses of other types. And although there aren't that many in the earlier type galaxies and none in ellipticals, There are only about 16 objects for this class. It matches up with the 91T-like very well, so I don't think you can immediately throw things out. And there was one in an S0, so it's tough to say that these things are from very massive stars. Now, there are a few different ways to look at constraining this stuff. So you can look at nebular spectra, earlier data, maybe X-ray and radio stuff, but the nebular spectra of O2CX hasn't been particularly useful. The models haven't constrained it too much, but again, Saurabh will talk about this more and hopefully shed some more light on it. I'll just put this up, but I'm running low on time, and say that essentially one thing that we can look at is maybe look at the early time data and see if that has any information. And luckily, I was given this spectrum about a couple weeks after I put my paper on AstroPH. There's actually a maximum light spectrum that was taken and not reported from the HET. And this spectrum shows definitive silicon, definitive sulfur, and carbon. So the sulfur means that essentially there has to be carbon-oxygen burning. The silicon here is also a good indication of that, but you have seen this in some type 1 BCs. The carbon, if this is a white dwarf, that means there's a lot of unburned material. This is at maximum light, so it goes deep into the ejecta. There's still calcium at later times, so that's probably helium burning, but I'm not sure. There's no sign of helium in the early time spectrum. So this is something that I saw in an email that Bob wrote a few years ago. This was all he wrote in the email: spectrum is truth. So I'll just refer, I'll refer there and just say, I'm not sure 100%. I'm sure theorists will be able to figure this out and make this into a massive star. But I think things are pointing towards this being a white dwarf. We also got a late time spectrum, but it was pretty much just noise, inconsistent with anything that you want it to be. Unfortunately, it's very faint. And this is sort of our limits. It's on top of an H2 region. So it's consistent with something like 10 to the minus 3 solar masses of nickel. But again, Saurabh will talk about the late time decays of these objects. And I think I'm over this, over time, but I'll just point out that Avishai will talk about this some more and how these things might be interesting and how, you know, eventually we will find many, many more of these. They might be sort of 10% of the 1A rate. And leave this up, but mention that there are many related talks and posters.
So. Okay, well, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, well, we do have time for a few questions. We'll start with Avishai.
So can you please bring up the new spectrum you showed,
yeah,
which is very, very nice.
I figured you might want to. Okay.
So, yeah, so in relation to 2005E, I think that that's a very important new clue, because having this nice detections of silicon and sulfur really points towards carbon-oxygen burning products,
yeah,
which distinguishes it from 2005E, where you only have helium burning products. So,
yeah,
so at least the material that is burned, whether it is on a white dwarf or wherever you want to burn it,
yeah,
is different.
Yeah, so I somewhere mentioned this. Probably in my last slide. Yeah. So yeah, again, I'm not a theorist, but I think if you vary the ratio of carbon oxygen to helium burning, not necessarily what's in the progenitor, then you might be able to either get 2005E or 2008HA or 2002CX. So yeah, I'm hopeful that there are some theorists who are already figuring this out for me.
Well, most simply, if you find something on top of an H2 region, I would assume, being simple-minded, it has something to do with the H2 region.
Yeah, so I'm all right. So 08HA, first of all, should always be separated from the rest of O2CX-like objects. It's very different in luminosity. It's very different in its light curve shape. And so to make the broad stroke that they're all the same, I think, is unfair. This is a singular object and could be much different from all of these. But Saurabh will show these images of 08A and 05HK, which are nowhere near any sort of H2 region. Yeah, so this particular object, it might have something related to it. It's on this irregular galaxy. There are a bunch of H2 regions. It might just be a chance coincidence.
We can take a few more questions, actually, because I understand that the caterers are running a bit late. So, we can begin our partying right here with a few more questions. Okay, I'll give this to you again. I'll head back.
No.
I know you'd like to say something. We'll finish up with a few questions, and then Sri has a brief announcement.
Hi, Ryan. Can you go back to your comparison with other object?
The early or the late?
The early one.
Okay.
No, sorry. The one with the 05
sure,
CS
sure.
with yeah,
there.
This one. Did okay. you correct for reddening? Because I have the impression that 89B is quite a red object, and if you correct for reddening, the continuum will be completely different from that one. And I think that also if you correct for reddening, also the comparison with 05CS is quite good. Also in my poster there is this comparison, and I found that 05CS is the most similar object to 08HA.
Okay, so I know your spectrum for 05CS or maybe 08HA gets cut off a little bit. I don't know exactly how blue you go. But it's, you know, if it is only sort of 5,000 angstroms, then yeah, it's great. I believe I corrected for reddening because that's something I normally do, but I don't, you know, I made this plot months ago and I don't actually remember.
I'm more wondering about 89B that it's quite a reddening object, and I think that if you correct for reddening, it's the continuum is much bluer than what you are showing there. But.
Perhaps, but I doubt it actually. I mean, yeah.
Ryan, I just wanted to remind you that Sloan has found an object 07QD, which is intermediate in luminosity between 08HA and 02CX, and also shows strong silicon right around maximum.
So do you have a poster?
No.
Okay, but yeah, so 07QD?
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, and so that might be the Rosetta Stone between 08HA and 02CX. So yeah, I've seen preliminary stuff that you've shown me, but I'm sure the community will certainly be very interested.
Okay, well, I see that there are a couple of bowls of nuts that are beginning to appear, so we'll take one last question, and then Sri had a comment.
Yeah.
So helium is sometimes hard to see because of ionization effects.
Yeah.
If there were helium in this thing, I would have thought that the expansion speeds and the light curve, the fast decay time, and the luminosity would have reminded me of the precursor outburst of 06JC. In other words, a non-terminal outburst, which we never got a spectrum of.
Right.
I know you're familiar with that object, so any thoughts?
If there were good reason to think that they were helium.
Yes.
Right.
So, my suggestion, although again, you know, there are ways of getting around this, of having of an inefficient 0.1A or having an accretion-induced collapse where somehow you do have a disk of material and not everything goes up to iron, is that, you know, pretty much as long as you don't have a fallback mechanism where you create a black hole, you did not destroy the star. And so, yes, these do have potential for being recurrent or, you know, having a future explosion that does destroy the star.
Okay, so this is really short?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Ryan, could you go back to your -1 day spectrum?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if you know off the top of your head what the velocity of the carbon and the silicon are.
They're perfectly matched, I think.
They are, okay. It just looks like the carbon was below the silicon, just because the absorption's not right on top of the emission. But I didn't know.
So this is just SINAU.
Sure.
And you know, however well I tweaked the parameters, but you know, to within certainly a couple hundred kilometers a second or something, they are at the same velocity. But if you're suggesting that maybe the carbon comes from the the binary companion.
I was just curious. I don't want to imply anything.
I'm not saying that this was definitively from the carbon was definitively from the progenitor of O8HA. It might have been from the companion and just in the surrounding area and happens to have a velocity similar. That's a possibility. At maximum, it's actually a bit faster. It's something like 4,000 kilometers a second.
Okay, before we thank Ryan again and all of our speakers, I think Sri had a very brief announcement.
Yeah. Well, I apologize. I didn't put up a poster. Maybe I will. I do want to say a few words about something I've been involved in, and I want you to, so it's an advertisement. I have to apologize to that as well. I think the next 10 years is an era of astrometry. You'll have Gaia, which is a great mission, lots of things we heard about things to do. And I want to say something about SIM, and the best thing to do that is there's some nice, magnificent books. Supernovae, you've been there, done that. You can keep on doing this sort of stuff. But if you're young, want to do something interesting, collect a book on your way out. Thanks.
And with that note of encouragement, we will thank our speakers for today's session.